The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Runes, the 2018 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2018. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
So thank you so much for being here. I just want to be clear and honest about the fact that I feel so humbled to be able to present to you guys today. And when Tom Spencer asked me to talk about evaluations and what we're doing at Highland Room Academy, we're in Cookeville, Tennessee, I thought, we're not doing anything amazing. I don't feel like I'm an expert here. And so I don't know if you're going to learn anything new, but my hope is that this would be an opportunity to just have an hour to sit and think about what your evaluation system looks like and to reassess some things. That should have been my synopsis. You won't learn anything new. I also want to say, I know that I'm the only thing standing between you and lunch. If you pull out a sandwich, I won't mind, as long as you don't mind if I also pull out a sandwich at some point. So I was thinking about who my audience would be. I assume that you are all administrators. Does that sound about right? And just trying to think about, who am I addressing, and what do I need to build up a good, just have a good understanding of who these people are. And as I was going over the details of the conference, I realized, Doug Wilson is speaking at the same time as my session. And either two things will happen. No one will come, or people will come, which I think is worse. And so I just want to be clear about the fact that I don't know that as people who are going to go home and evaluate your teachers, or already doing that, I assume, I don't think I trust your judgment. Because you should be over there listening to him, but I really am. I'm thankful that you're here. I'm humbled to speak with you and share with you at least what I've learned. I've been at Highland Room. We started in 2007 in Cookeville, Tennessee. I was hired as the first employee there, started working in February before the school year began, and it was probably the second year or so that I came on as an administrator. And I started in the first and second grade classroom. Loved it, was sort of torn because I thought, no, I really wanted to work with teenagers eventually, but this is so fun. And really just followed those kids up in one class or another up until I did get to the upper school. And so I've landed in the rhetoric classes and oversee senior thesis. I'm the assistant head of school and serve mostly in the academic dean role there. So, I have four kids. We already talked about them, those regrets. Two are in school. Two have been in second grade and fourth grade, and so I'm learning what it looks like to be a parent of kids in a classical Christian school, and that's been good. It's been really good for me. So let's begin. The first point on the outline says Jaber Crow and Samwise Gamgee. That's just a joke. That's a trick for you to spend the whole workshop thinking, you know, what do Jaber Crow and Samwise Gamgee have to do with one another? I really think there are some important lessons. I really want to circle around at the end of the presentation and talk about them so you can guess this whole time. You can think. Jaber Crow is a novel written by Wendell Berry. Oh, I have them here. If you've not read it, I highly recommend it. It makes for really excellent summer reading. And then, of course, if you don't know who Samwise Gamgee is, I can't help you. But we'll circle around. We'll talk about those fellas at the end. So let's begin talking about cultivating exceptional faculty, flourishing through formative evaluations. Friends or family would say, "Oh, what are you talking about at the conference?" And I was like, "Evaluations." I sometimes feel like I wish I could hear these talks, but then I have to eat my vegetables as an administrator and go hear these ones instead, and I realize that's why you're here. And so hopefully I'll make it helpful and beneficial and worth your time. Let's begin by defining our terms, shall we? And these are not terms that are foreign to you, but I think one of the things I love about defining terms when we begin a discussion, I tell this with my students, is not because we don't know what the words mean, but because taking time to unpack them at least a little bit gives us some mental categories for some thought and work that we're going to do in that realm, right? So these are not foreign words to you, but I thought it's a good opportunity to just sit and think about what do they mean for our purposes today. So I just want to talk about three words. Cultivating, just pulling from the title here, cultivating. motivating, flourishing, and then formative evaluation. So very briefly, I actually took out several pages. I could probably do an entire whole nother session on what it means to be a cultivator as an administrator, but I only had an hour. I knew you guys would want to stay through lunch. I was confident in that. But for the sake of the schedule, I thought I'll cut that short. So let's just look very quickly at what it means to cultivate. Simply, for our purposes, to provide an environment for growth, right? We could apply that to so many things. Gardening. I raise tomatoes and basil and cilantro because all we eat at my house is Mexican and Italian. It's pretty much all you need. And so I know a little bit about gardening. I know some more than I did about cultivating a family, still learning quite a bit. My oldest is only 9, so I have a lot to learn there. But today we want to talk about cultivating exceptional faculty. And what I mean by cultivating there in that regard is simply providing an environment for growth and preparing for fruitfulness. And preparing for fruitfulness is really important because we are not making something fruitful. We don't have that ability as administration. We can't make the classrooms or the teachers or the content. We can't make that fruitful, but we can prepare for fruitfulness there. So cultivating. The next word is flourishing. What does it mean to flourish? Simply to be in ideal health. In ideal health. Abundantly fruitful. Right? So you have a tomato plant. It's fruitful, but maybe not flourishing. Right? Maybe there's some good tomatoes there, some are a little sick. You know, you may be having to do a little more pruning than you had hoped. That's not quite flourishing, even though there might be some fruit there. When we talk about flourishing, ideal health, abundantly fruitful. And I want to outline just a little bit what that looks like as it regards your faculty. So go ahead and get all those great faces in your mind. Think about these characteristics of what it means to flourish. So to flourish means that your faculty have joy and peace while they're at work. Both of those. Joy and peace as they go about during. I'm not talking about like in-service week. Probably not a lot of peace then. But joy and peace. There should be good anticipation, good excitement. The work personal life for that employee should be not regularly imbalanced. Okay, and I worded it that way because there will be times in the school year where that's going to be a little out of whack, and I know that. But it shouldn't be the norm, right? So it should be pretty regularly balanced. There should be healthy relationships with students, administration, peers, parents, and support staff. That's a lot of relationships. Have you ever sat down and like mapped out all the individual relationships or even relationships between groups? We only have 4 kids. I used to think in our school atmosphere, that's kind of a lot. People are like, how do you have 4 kids? But I know here at the ACCS, it's like, we only have 4 kids. But just with the 4 children, and then my husband and I, so 6 people in our household, 2 boys, 2 girls, and I'm looking at relationships even between like genders and groups, you know, parents and children, but there are 20 relationships in my house, 20 relationships that my husband and I are trying to manage. So think about what that looks like for your school and all of the different relationships trying to be managed there. So again, flourishing, meeting and exceeding, but not always exceeding, but at least meeting and exceeding curricular, relational, and pedagogical objectives, right? Having new ideas, creating or modifying curriculum, really engaging with the curriculum. There's student learning and discipleship going on. And then for that person to flourish, they are leading well and following well. And they don't have to be in a leadership position. So maybe you have a teacher who's been there for 10 years and they're in no kind of leadership position. They should still be leading maybe newer teachers, at least informally. And so if they're abundantly fruitful, what's that fruit going to do? If you've grown plants, if a plant is super healthy and abundantly fruitful, what happens often with some of the fruit? Most of it you harvest, but some of it you can't get to and it falls in the ground and it just rots. And that's okay. Because its job is just to be abundantly fruitful. So your teachers, even if they're not in official leadership position, that fruit should just be falling all over the place, and they should be leading other people, but they should also be following well. Flourishing does not look like somebody coming in, keeping their head down, shutting the door to their classroom, doing their job, and being cut off from everyone else. Now, maybe they're doing a really great job. No complaints from parents. The kids are happy. Curricular objectives are being met, but they are cut off. That is not flourishing. Flourishing does not look like overworking regularly. We already talked about that a little bit. The first year, I always tell teachers, the first year, you're just going to feel like you're drowning. You're not, but you're going to feel that way. It's just going to be this mental exercise of regularly telling yourself, I can make this, I can do this. And so I know there's a lot that goes on there. But after a certain period, and again, certain times of the year, definitely busier than others, but there shouldn't be regular overworking. This teacher could be killing it. But I always wonder, what does that look like for them in the evenings? Right? Are they having to go put 3-4 hours in every single night in order to do their job really well? That's not flourishing. It might look like it, but that's not flourishing. And then flourishing does not look like a mere absence of problems, right? So nobody complains, everyone's happy. That's not good enough. At least it's not good enough for me. It's not what I want for our faculty when I think about faculty culture and what it looks like for our teachers to be excellent. The third definition is formative evaluation. I know that you know what this means, but just for the sake of clarity, this is assessment during the time of development or improvement. Okay, during the time, of course, is contrasted with summative evaluation, which is a final judgment for a period of time. And at your school, it might be a semester or typically at the end of the year. So we have formative evaluation, which is the crux of what I want to talk about today, but then also summative evaluation, and we'll talk about how we really do need both. We don't want just one of those because then we're leaving something out. So let's apply the trivium, shall we? That's what we do, right? We're also going to apply it backwards today, and I was thinking really hard for a good rationale because I was afraid you would stone me, but I'm just going to jump in and do that. So we're going to start with the why questions. I always need to know why something before I get into the nitty-gritty details. And so let's talk about why we do these evaluations. Have a really good understanding of what we're even, why is, I mean, I don't know about you guys, it takes up a lot of our time, right? It should. And so we have to have a really good understanding of how meaningful is this, why are we doing this, and then we'll get into the how and the what, and we'll just walk back through the trivium. So why do schools utilize faculty and staff evaluations? What is their purpose or their TLOS? What is the goal? What are we doing here? Have you ever just sat down and wondered or asked yourself, why am I going to spend the next hour watching this teacher, time following up, right? What am I really after? Let's look at a C.S. Lewis quote here, always appropriate. He says, "We are doubtless full of faults and do not shun criticism, provided such criticism is based on an understanding of our aims." If you'll just underline that, understanding of our aims, super important. "You may not agree with these aims, though I hope that you will, but do not blame a man for making slow progress to the north when he is trying to get to the east," right? So in education, it seems like everyone else is going north, but we want to travel in a different direction, don't we? Probably not east, probably west. But still, we want to travel in a different direction, and we have to understand, and our teachers have to understand, where am I headed? We need to understand our aims. So why do and why should schools utilize evaluations? When you consider your school, your classroom environment, of course, it should be specific to different stages of the trivium. Your faculty culture, what learning looks like, how it feels when it's drifting out of the classrooms into the hallways like a pleasing aroma. I want to ask you, what is it that you want? What are you wanting from your teachers? What do you hope to see and hear in the hallways? What are you after? What does it look like? And what does it feel like? And how do you know when you have it? That's the question. How do you know when you have it? And then how do you know when you don't, right? So I think thinking about vision in two different ways, I elaborated yesterday at a talk I gave, so I hope this is not too redundant for those who were there. But thinking about vision in two ways, I think will be really helpful to answer this question, how do we know when we have it? When we think about vision, we want to think about it in two different specific ways. It's the ability to, at least for our purposes, it's the ability to see something that is there, right? I have 20/20 vision. I think that's changed over the last couple of years, but it's ability to see what's in front of you, but it's also the ability to see something that is not there, right? Like John the Revelator had a vision, something that is invisible. You cannot touch it, you cannot grasp it, but that's what our work is, right? We're trying to create something and work on something that we see and yet we don't see. Maybe some of it is there, depending on the stage your school is in or the different struggles you have. Maybe you see a whole lot of it day to day, or maybe it's still a vision that is far off. So you need sort of this double vision. I think there's a verse about being double-minded. That's not what I'm talking about. But that you have to be able to see something that is not there, and then you also need to be able to see very clearly what is there and have a good understanding of both of them, even if it's good, bad, or ugly. There's often a tension between the two, and we have to reconcile that as we go about our work day to day, and that's all right. You can lean into that and not be afraid. So what is the purpose of conducting these evaluations? Well, it's to understand our aims, to help us with our vision, and to help us see our work and the work of others clearly. It helps administration see clearly, it helps the teacher see clearly, and then hopefully at the end of the day we're seeing the same thing, right? That's the goal. The most important part there, though, is to act upon what you see. So we need to see clearly, but then we have to do something about that. So how do we need help, or why do we need help seeing clearly? I don't know the context of your school, so a lot of this is what I know. I think that probably a lot of these things relate to you as well, just in doing lots of school visits. So you might have personal relationships between you and your faculty that might be positive or negative that might get in the way of seeing clearly. So at one time in our school, my husband worked he's a full-time pastor, but he would come in and teach a class like hermeneutics or something. So my husband worked for us, my sister-in-law worked for us, my brother-in-law worked for us, and then at least one other church member who we were friends with. And then also just really close friends. Of course, we'd been at the school for a long time. And so a lot of these faculty members are really good friends of mine, and I'm supposed to go in and evaluate them. Now, my husband and family, that was set aside. Our headmaster would do their evals. But nevertheless, our hope, if we want a great faculty culture, is that these are people, like these are our people, right? Oftentimes we're going to church with them. They might teach your kid in Sunday school. Spouses and other, you know, other family members might be there at the school. And so how do we deal with evaluations? Or how do we evaluate that person? How do we see clearly when there might be, you know, some relationships going on there? And again, that could be positive or negative. Maybe there was an offense that took place on the soccer field or at church, and now you have to go in and evaluate this person. Well, having a really great tool, having something on paper that is really thoughtful and really specific, can help you deal with those relationships that might cloud your vision. You might not want to engage or deal with conflict, and so you just sort of let some things slide because you just aren't the kind of person who enjoys conflict. Again, having a great tool helps us deal with that. You, just as an individual in your personality, you might be an overly optimistic person, and you think everybody's doing a great job all the time, and if that's your school, good for you. I'd love to know how you're doing that. But you also might have a personality where you're a little pessimistic, and you see things with a little bit of a negative bent. Again, a great tool will help with that. And then what about those teachers who have a bad record and you walk into the classroom and you're like, well, I know how this is going to go, right? Or I know where the weak areas are. And then there are those teachers who have amazing records. I mean, they're the creme de la creme. And you go in and you're just like, I don't even need that paper. I'm just going to sit and enjoy and learn and be delighted. Well, we need a really great tool to help us deal with that, or else that feedback isn't going to be really helpful for those people. Additionally, evaluations help us gather information. So we are definitely in there watching teachers, right? And that informs our decisions for training. What are the needs of the school in terms of faculty training? What specific feedback does this teacher need? But you're also observing a lot about students, right? You're watching, you know, maybe there's some complaints about a little fourth grade girl being a little bossy. You can get in there and observe that. What's the dynamic between these boys? That might help you a lot when you're having those parent meetings later on. You can see curriculum in action, right? Is this curriculum working well? What are some of the snags here? Get a good feel for the culture of that classroom, maybe for the culture of a department. So sitting in there and taking notes is not just about the teacher, right? There's a lot to observe. Even have a good feel for what are the logistics of the schedule and how is that working in here? And are there any like facility or furniture needs? You know, maybe a third grader had a growth spurt and you can tell their knees are really uncomfortable under that desk and you say, oh, teacher never mentioned that, and I'm glad I'm in here so I can see that. So it helps us gather information, and this is important because it helps us add specificity. Specificity is so important when we are evaluating other people and trying to give them feedback so that we can really form them as teachers and as individuals. So I want you to consider the lack of specificity here. So I have a teacher, and I say, I enjoyed being in your class. Great job. Great job. Okay? And I want to contrast it with this. You know, your regular chants are just so effective with classroom management, and man, they really aid student learning. Keep up with those chants and those callbacks. You do them constantly, and that's a great job. Think about the difference between those two comments. One is very, very specific, right? Both are positive, but one is very specific. Or here's another one. I'm really thankful to have you teaching with us this year. It's nice, right? Every teacher would love to have an administrator say that to them. But what about this? You know, the way you handle those kids in the back row, it just really administered the gospel to my heart and to theirs. I'm so thankful to have you teaching with us this year. See how that specificity changes that comment? Now, what does that teacher, how does that affect or form, right? We're talking about formative evaluation. How does that specificity affect their formation? So when I tell a teacher, hey, your constant callbacks are super effective when it comes to classroom management and student learning, what is she going to turn around and do? She's going to keep on doing that. And if I say, great job, you keep it up, what is she going to go keep doing? I don't know. She might not know either. Right? In fact, she might say, gosh, I feel like I do too many callbacks. I'm going to cut back on that. She might not have any idea. Specificity. Let's talk about why we don't use evals. We don't use them to reduce our faculty to easy numbers for just processing human resources. We don't do that. We don't use them to find problems and fix them. We don't use them just to check boxes for accreditation. Yep, the files. It's all in the files. It's there. We do those. And we don't do them just because it seems like the kind of thing that schools should do. I remember our second or third year, our headmaster came to me, and this is when I was sort of growing into more, it seems like in school startups, you're sort of unofficially in a role, and then eventually becomes official. So I think I was unofficially in this role. And we were talking, and we both agreed, like, we should probably do teacher evaluations because we don't, and it just seems like a good, it's like, a thing is a thing. And that's how we started doing it. Thankfully, we've come a long way from there. But don't just do it because it's what schools do. So let's move on to the logic stage and consider formative evaluations as a system and think about how that system works best. So how do formative evaluations work best? I have two thoughts on this. They work best when you are clear about what the tool is for. Hammers don't tighten screws, and a pocket knife isn't going to help you sew a button on. So develop ends and limitations for your evaluations. You should have ends and limitations for most things, but for your evaluations, surely. And outline as a specific school what your formative evaluations will and will not assess. Okay? So ask yourself these questions. Will our assessment evaluate something like attitude? Well, how will it do that? What would be success markers if you're looking at a teacher's attitude? How will they know that they've met the goal? How will you know? I mean, we all want our teachers to have a great attitude, right? It's something we're after. But how would we measure that? And how would they know that they've met that goal? Should it measure whether someone is a team player? Again, that's a difficult... How would you actually measure that? What would success markers look like? What about work-life balance? We said that was really important. So shouldn't we measure it? We actually used to have work-life balance on our evaluation, and the administrators hated it because we don't know. Now, some teachers we knew because we knew they were there till 5 or 6 o'clock every night. And so some we knew. Some teachers might complain, so we knew. But really, it was like an easy A. We just checked it off and they were fine. That's not helpful, and it's definitely not formative. My second thought about how formative evals work best. So first, we want to be really clear about what the purpose of that evaluation tool is for. And you should have different kinds of evals, and they should measure different things, so there'll be different purposes there. But the second thing is that you should create a year-long system, a system of evaluations, not just a single assessment that you give once or twice a year. That's not going to suffice. If you do that, then you're asking that tool that you apply once or twice a year to do too much, and it won't work really well, right? It's when we use that hammer to do everything that the house needs, and that's not going to work well. So we want to talk about creating a system. Now we can get to the grammar stage. I'm going to make sure my timer is handy. What kind of evaluation should we use? So we start with the why question, then the how. Now here's the what. What kind of evals should we use? And then when and where should we use them? So those grammar level questions, we need them, right? We never leave the grammar stage, do we? And here's my answer. And then I'm going to unpack this a little bit. We should use truly formative evaluations. You should have seen that coming. Truly formative evaluations regularly, in addition to a summative evaluation for all employees. So again, we should use truly formative evaluations regularly, in addition to a summative evaluation for all employees. Now remember, I told you you wouldn't learn anything new. I'm just here to remind you of the things you guys already know. I mean, we are forgetful people, right? I don't mean administrators. I mean humanity. We need to be reminded often. So if you're underwhelmed by that, I know. But it's a good opportunity to sit and think. We should use truly formative evaluations. I want to unpack four different things. So formative evals, the word regularly, what that looks like, summative, and then all employees. Let's look at that briefly. So we want our evals to be really formative, and they must be structured to form the individual and their skills, not just assess them. We want them to form people. Isn't that what these schools are about, right? We're forming human beings. But not just our kids, our teachers. And we tell our teachers that when we hire them, that our hope is that they would grow and form just as much as the children in their classrooms would. That we're in the business of helping helping form human beings. So we want to ensure that both the content and the structure or the form of the evaluation process is working towards that goal. The content and the form. My students they'll roll their eyes when I say content and form because I say it all the time. And I teach rhetoric, so I'm always like, content, but also the form. Don't just present a great argument. It should be done in a beautiful way. Consider both of those things. So what should the structure of the evaluation program or system look like? I have seven things for you here quickly. So we're going to talk about structure content and form or structure. I'm using those words interchangeably. That's probably not very helpful. What should that structure look like? Well, the seven laws of teaching should be your spine when we look at the pedagogy, right? Your evaluators should be master teachers themselves who can form your faculty. That's really important because what it takes to administrate a school is a host of excellent skills. But being a master teacher, that's the kind of person who should be in there evaluating, not just somebody who's really good at business. Right, which is great if you're running a school, but you need more than, you know, how do I run a business and deal with the financials and manage people? You need to be a master teacher if you're really going to help form master teachers, right? And if that's not you, then find who those people are and develop some kind of leadership program so that those are the people who are in there, a mentorship program or something. But the evaluators should be master teachers or else that formation. You can assess, but you can't help form. The lesson plan reviews, right? The eval reviews, when you're done with that and you sit down with that teacher, it should allow time for discussion that forms that teacher. It's not just, here are the papers, I put it in your box, look over it, let me know if you have any questions. But you need to plan sufficient time to form that teacher. It's not a report to them. It's a discussion. And also, just think about how much that humanizes them as well, right? When you take the time to really talk through that. Number four, you should include peer reviews and observations, and we'll talk about where that fits into the system in a minute. But peer reviews and with notes helps with that formative aspect. Your formative eval should be structured in such a way that you would engage the teacher and make them active. I told you I teach rhetoric. I have an English degree, and I harp on my students all the time about passive voice. I say, this is not Latin class. Do all the passive voice you want to in Latin. This is English. Be active. Be clear. Unless you really want a job in a bureaucracy, and then you can go ahead and practice that passive verb tense all you want. We don't want passive teachers. We don't want passive learners. We would never let teachers teach their students and allow their students to be passive, right? Right, we want active students, so we want active teachers in this process as well. Here are some ways to help your teachers be active in this process. Involve that teacher with a self-assessment piece. And again, I'll break all that down, what that looks like. But there should be a time where that teacher is assessing themselves. That's not rocket science. Most of you are probably doing that anyway. And if you're not, it's a great time to start. Make them active. Say things like, you know, next time I really want you to work on this specific thing, and I'm going to drop by depending on what it is. I'm going to drop by in the next week, next month, depending on how much time they might need to work on something, and I want to see that in action, and we'll follow up. Make them active, right? This is not just a report, but make them active. And then we also have our teachers list goals at the beginning of the year that they have to meet throughout the year. And that's just, we want them active. We don't want them passive recipients. So two more ways to structure evals to make them really, really formative. You want them to be regular with immediate feedback. Feedback is one of the last stages of learning, right? Don't we want our teachers giving those graded papers back the pretty quick turnaround? I don't know if you guys have guidelines. We have guidelines for that stuff at our school. That way a kid doesn't take a test and it just goes off into the ether. That's not formative, right? It's not sufficient for students, so it's not sufficient for our teachers either. We want to see them just as quickly as possible. We want as immediate as possible feedback with those teachers because that helps to form them. And then as we sit down for those lesson evaluations, we're going to touch base quickly on the end-of-year eval components. Even though I might not be marking that on paper, I might say, you know, at the end of the year, we're going to talk about these other things. Let's just go ahead and bring them up now. That way you are being formed in the process. That way that even that summative piece at the end of the year, right, it's summative, we're going to bring that up in conversation when we sit down to talk about the lesson evals just to make sure that they're not surprised at the end of the year and that they could have been actually growing, right? So if we're having an attitude problem, we say, you know, you're really negative a lot of the times, we don't want to just talk about that at the end of the year. Now, that's not on a lesson evaluation because at that point I'm looking at the lesson. But I might bring it up so that they can be formed, right? Really be formed and improve and not just have a whole year of, and then at the end say, you know, your attitude was still pretty rotten this year. It doesn't help that teacher at all. It doesn't help them form. So we want to touch base about that summative, those summative components, touch base on, even throughout the year. So that's the structure. What should the content of your evaluation look like? You want to be as specific as possible. As specific as possible. I can hear chanting over here, and I think that some teachers from our school are presenting, and I think those are my kids in that video. We should listen. So we want to be as specific as possible. Ask for precisely what you want. And I don't mean in a micromanaging kind of way. I like to manage people by saying, there's the goal. You can't do this and you can't do this. Anything within that, there's the goal. Go for it. Because I believe in you, because I'm not your mom, and I want to see what you can do. So go for it. I like to be hands off, maybe sometimes too hands off. But when it comes to this lesson eval and evaluating teachers, we want to be as specific as possible. So how can we be specific? Well, let me say this. You have a job description for your faculty, right? It's probably in some handbook somewhere. How often do they look at it? Maybe once a year? I don't know. Maybe you're great and you have the system for bringing it up often. Your lesson evaluation and your summative evaluation, they may be a better job description than the job description because it's something that they're going to be rated on and scored on, and teachers tend to want to do really well, at least they should. And so that might be a better job description than the job description. So be as specific as possible, right? Do you want cheerful teachers? If you do, specify that. If you want trivium level questions appropriate for the lesson or the student's age, then specify that on the lesson evaluation. The seven laws of teaching should be stated explicitly. We had a problem where our teachers weren't asking students to rephrase the content in their own words. And so we adopted a new evaluation model that had that. It was like one of the components. And the first time everyone used it, nobody did well on that, just one out of, I don't know, 40 or 50 different components. But nobody was doing well there. It was always one error. I was like, okay, let's keep working on that. That's what this would look like. And with your lesson today that I saw, this is what, you know, here are some ways to do that. And it's pretty easy to do, but it's a habit. You just got to get in the habit. And I'm going to come by in a week, and I want to see what that looks like. And the second time we went through, because we do two evaluations a year, the second time we went through, half the teachers were nailing it. By the following year, everybody does this at our school pretty well. You know why? We put it on paper. We put little boxes by it so we can rate that. And then we talk about it. I mean, we deal with it. If they're not doing it well, then we're going to talk about that. There's going to be a little bit of accountability there. And that wasn't difficult for the teachers because they want to do well, right? Right? And so they loved being told, tell me what to do, I'm going to work at it, I'm going to do it, and then they enjoyed being successful there. So be specific, ask for what you want. Also, consider the entire person. So you have a teacher, right, and you're looking at classroom management and pedagogy, but you also have a coworker. That's very different. Have you seen people excel at one and not the other? Yeah. And then they're also an employee, and they work under an administrative team. And it's very easy to do one or two of those three well, but not all of them. So you can be the best teacher. You engage the kids. There's good discipleship. You know, you're really getting the kids into the content, but you cannot show up on time. And that's a problem as an employee, right? Or you're too harsh with your coworkers and you're difficult to work with. Well, I'm glad the kids love you. But these are other important aspects as well. They need to come up. That's not in our lesson eval. That's in our summative eval at the end of the year. But you should consider the entire person. So again, that was teacher, coworker, employee. And I just want to remind you that most people are really eager to just do exactly what you ask of them, right? If they're not, then maybe they're not a great fit for your school. But I found our teachers will come to us, especially those really fantastic teachers who tend to do well. They're the ones who have come to me and said, Christy, I know I have an eval coming up, and I know I usually do well, but I just want to encourage you to give me really good feedback. I really want to change. I want to know what I can do better. And I think, who are these people? They're asking me, you know, for some criticism. And they're sincere. And those are the kind of teachers you want. All right, content. This is super important. If you want to evaluate according to, say, those seven laws of teaching, right? I'm going to evaluate those things. Set your teachers up well to accomplish that by having a lesson plan format that is specific to the seven laws of teaching. And I hope you saw the handouts. They were sitting on some chairs outside. And those, my husband's like, those are terrible handouts. I have a link to Word documents so you can have all of those. I'll share that with you at the end. I just wanted you to have I know they're super small, but I wanted you to have a quick visual. The lesson plan format we have, we actually got from Rockbridge Academy. And so so much of what we do well is because we borrowed from other people, but I just want to give credit where credit is due. And that lesson plan requires all of the laws are cited in there. If you do that lesson plan, right, you will know exactly where you're hitting and missing those laws. There might be a little bit of tweaking, but you're not going to be leaving out review because there's a box for it, right? And so we provide that as a tool for our teachers. Use this. If you use that, if you teach that lesson plan, your eval is probably going to go pretty well because that's what I'm evaluating you on. So again, we should use truly formative evaluations regularly in addition to a summative evaluation for all employees. Let's talk about what it means regular. So the formal lesson eval, I don't know what everyone else is doing, no less than twice a year, even for teachers who've been with you for quite a while. If you do one, then it just becomes the final word, and now it's a summative eval, right? And so we want it to be formative. We want to form. And if we're forming things, we don't touch it once and leave it alone. We want to keep coming back to it. If there were tons of resources, we would do this every quarter. Your informal evals, this is where you just stop by for maybe 10, 15 minutes and take a few notes, and always take notes. Don't just go into a teacher's classroom and watch and then leave. Because most teachers are going to be super nervous about that. What are they thinking? And, you know, they want to know what you're thinking. I think they deserve that. Your informal evals, they could be weekly, monthly, quarterly, depending on your admin team size. Different schools have different resources. But as regular as possible, you should be informally evaluating your teachers probably more than you do. At least that's true for me. And then what do we mean when we say summative? Let's talk about summative evals for a minute. So this is the final judgment, and it's a very important piece of the puzzle. It also takes some pressure off the formative pieces. So when I do that lesson plan eval twice a year, I can really talk about the pedagogy and the classroom management and what's the culture like in this classroom. This is my snapshot, right? And I might mention things like how well are they working with other teachers and are they showing up on time and taking care of other responsibilities, but that's not on paper. We might talk about it because they're going to be assessed at the end of the year, but I'm not going to put that on paper. It's just going to be like a little checkup. Right? And so there I can really just focus on the teaching. And we've had teachers who are fantastic in the classroom. When those doors are closed and they're with kids, I mean, they're on point. But everything else is not going so well. So we do want to talk about those things, but at least I have the freedom to just deal with the pedagogy and just deal with the classroom management. And also, a teacher is more than the sum of his or her lessons, right? Again, there's that coworker and that employee piece. The last part of that statement I made earlier, evaluations for all of your employees. This talk is about faculty assessments or faculty evals, but I just want to encourage you, don't just evaluate your teachers. Everybody who shows up and is investing in your school on payroll, I know you probably have a lot of volunteers as well, but everybody who's showing up and is employed by you, they need to be evaluated as well. So this includes the secretary and teacher's aides and the lunch monitor. I don't know what kind of other roles you have. Your marketing director and development director, they all need some feedback as well. They're wanting it. I promise they are. If they're not, you might have some other problems. So let me tell you what we do at Highland Rim. Okay. At the beginning of the year during in-service, this will be the end of July because our school does something called year-round school. And my first day back full-time will be July 20th, which I just want to note for the record is my birthday. You don't understand. I went into teaching specifically to have my birthday off every year. This ought not be. So in July, our teachers will come back. And we're going to pull out that end-of-year eval, and I do have that for you. And what they'll have is the last page, and they'll have some goals that they need to write down, three of them. One of the goals they're going to get from their summative eval at the end of last year. So at the end of the previous year, we're going to say, you know, from your admin team, this is the goal we want you to apply next year. If it's a new faculty member, we usually do something really vague like learn more about classical education. And we give them specific ways to do that, but we still assign that one for a new teacher as well. Maybe you have a new teacher coming in, you know, maybe more specifically, and that would be fantastic. But they're going to fill in an additional two, and those are their goals. They submit that to us. We check off, make sure that those are kosher. They need to be something measurable because they're going to have to cite at the end of the year two specific ways that they've met that goal, and it needs to be measurable. Okay, that's very important. So something like, I'm going to have a better attitude this year, how are we going to measure that? I mean, we can know it, right? And we don't want to submit everything to scientific proof, but we also want to put our teacher in a position where he or she knows when they're doing well, and that we know when they're doing well, and that there's no discrepancy when we have to talk about that. Wouldn't it be difficult, right? I don't think your attitude's been great. Well, I thought I was making a lot of progress. Well, how would you measure that? Not that there's no room for those discussions, but these need to be measurable goals. So we do that at the very beginning of the year, and then we're going to have our formal lesson plan evals. The teacher's going to, and by the way, they do not complete those lesson plans for every lesson they teach. This is just for the formal ones. It's a framework, and our goal is that that would be sort of embedded and, you know, less officially in their lesson plans. But that lesson plan, they'll fill out. They should submit it to us a day before so that we can review it. I want to be pretty comfortable with what I'm going in to see because I'm watching so many things, right? And I want to be pretty comfortable with the content that will be covered and how it's structured. So they'll submit to that to us a day before. And what we do is we set up several weeks. And at our school, we have a headmaster, I'm the assistant head, and then we have a primary lower department head, and then we have an upper department head. And our headmaster and I take care of most of those lesson evals. And we'll just switch. I'll do one, and then he'll do the other for that teacher because they do two a year. And so we switch. It's good to have a variety of voices speaking in, you know, what are you seeing and what am I seeing? And then we joke about which one of us is nicer, which one is harsher, because there is one of us who's always who's always nicer. But what we do is we say, teacher, you have this week. And we take all of our faculty and we split them up between him or me, you know, for that first quarter. And we say, this is your week. That way we're not trying to do 25 evals in 1 week. And so this is your week. You pick any block of time that I am not in class. I teach a few classes that I am not in class. Schedule that through the front desk. Because what I want to do on those formal evals, I want those teachers to pick the thing that they're the best at, the thing that they love. And I don't have to be afraid of that. They're making that choice because the times where you really need to go see a teacher in that math class or you need to see them with that grade and there are things that you need to go look at, well, that's what your informal evals are for, right? And that's when you can decide, I have to go in and see how that class is working. I know there's some problems going on. But when it comes to those formal lesson plans, we say, here's your week. Please schedule that. And then, you know, have that lesson plan to me, 45 minutes to an hour. And then they need to, after that time, they submit a self-assessment as soon as possible. And depending on the teacher's schedule for that day, ideally it would be by the end of the day because everything's really fresh. And I keep that very low key. Email me a paragraph. Give me your assessment of how that lesson went, right? Positive and negative things. Anything else that was noteworthy, something that happened out of the ordinary, you know, helpful as well. The next day, if their schedule, you know, doesn't allow them some time to get that typed out. But they should do a self-assessment. Remember, we're keeping our teachers active. And then we're going to sit down after. I don't give them any of my comments until after I've looked at their self-assessment because I want to know the weaknesses that I saw, did they see them too? The strengths that I saw, would they acknowledge those also as strengths? And it's really interesting. I think there have only been a few times where a teacher says, I say this was a strength. Way to go. I want you to keep doing that exact thing. And their self-assessment will say, I'm not good at this. I've got to keep working on this. And I think, I'm so thankful I had that from you before I gave you feedback so that we can connect. And of course, that would be even more important if I thought, we need to work on this area. And they write out to me, I think I'm doing really well there. Then I know that, okay, we need to spend a lot of time because the goal isn't just to report to them, it's to form them, right? So I want to have a good, what are you thinking? Again, this is how we teach our students, right? So my kid asks me a question at home. We're in the car, and they say, something about our whales, mammals. That was a question that came up recently. I say, what do you think? What do you know about a mammal, and what do you know about whales? And, you know, I want to know, what are you thinking first? What's your baseline? We'll do the same thing with our teachers because I want to teach them and form them well. So we're going to sit down after they send me that assessment. They're not going to see any of my feedback until then. Of course, I always smile because I don't want them to be really paranoid and nervous. But we're going to sit down together as soon as possible, 1 to 3 days max, 1 to 3 days max. And you can even schedule that before because you know you'll be in the classroom, so you can go ahead and schedule that and allow sufficient time to really unpack things. So that's our formal lesson plan eval. I don't think that's stunning. That seems really normal and average to me. And so when Tom Spencer asked for me to present, I thought, okay. And so I don't know how you hear that. I hope that you're encouraged and say, well, that looks like ours. Well, that's great. Maybe we're all doing the right thing. I hope that maybe you've learned something from that if that's not what you're doing. So the last piece for us is that summative piece. It's the end of your evaluation, and we do that in May. And we ask our teachers, we say by May 1st or whatever the school day might be that's closest to May 1st, please report back for each of those three goals. Remember the ones from the beginning of the year? And we had to create a system for making sure that we had a copy of that and they had a copy and that everyone would find it at the end of the year. We've had some problems with that. And so those three goals, give us two specific measurable ways that you met each of those three goals and show us how, you know, what in your mind, of course, most of the time I'm just taking that teacher's word for it, but there should be some evidence that I have observed as well. And then we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about that summative assessment. And that's really where we can say how, you know, on that. And again, I have that. I've given that to you. Are you supporting the vision of the school overtly? Right? I mean, maybe you're showing up every day and you're doing your job. But man, you were really critical about like this thing that we're doing called classical education. And that's a problem. Right? And we're going to look at that individual as an employee and a coworker and a teacher at that time. We're not really going to go, there are some spots there to look at pedagogy and methods and classroom management, but those are really two small pieces in that whole picture at that point. because now we're talking about something summative. And then also part of that end-of-year eval is going to assess professional development. And I've also included some copies there. We have a professional development program because we want to be formative, right? We want them to be active. So teachers are listening to lectures and reading books and attending seminars and doing all kinds of interesting things. And they're cataloging. They have to accrue points in three different areas. If they are an administrator of some kind, then they have a slightly different one that includes more networking, because networking is such an important way for us to grow. And then also on that professional development piece, they have to do two peer evaluations in the school. And then every other year, we're taking teachers off campus to another school, and we travel to another like-minded school, and we sit and we observe for the day, and we see what we can learn from them as well. But those peer observations are so helpful. And of course, teachers, I'm not telling them it's your job to evaluate them. I just say, hey, take some notes and give them to that teacher as a service to them. And then again, that's an additional voice there. So let me quickly go through five steps to take. We'll just get really practical. So what do you do? Maybe your school is really new. You have no evaluation program at all. Maybe you have one that you like. You don't think there's a problem with it. Hopefully these steps will be applicable to both. So step one, reevaluate your evaluation process. Oh, that sounds very bureaucratic, doesn't it? Evaluate your evaluations. Reevaluate that process and your tools. Okay, and I hope that at least as you're sitting here, I would love it if you didn't hear a lot of what I said, but you're in your own head walking through your own process and thinking of ideas. That would be so great. I would consider this talk a success if that's what you were doing, is thinking about ways to improve your own program. So when I evaluate a teacher, I always take notes on that tool itself. I mean, I'm there to watch the kids and the teacher and the curriculum, but if something is obvious to me, like, you know what, this specific characteristic, it's really vaguely worded. I don't like it anymore. I'll make a little note, and my headmaster and I can talk about that later. So reevaluate your tools. And I would just submit to you, take this next year, use your evaluation tool that you have, take notes on it for the year. Don't think you have to have something new and ready to go if you were wanting to make changes, new and ready to go by the time school starts. But take the whole next year and evaluate that as you use it. And then you can come back to that next summer, or maybe at the end of the year, and create something new. And then also get some input from your excellent teachers, because they'll say, you know, that's fine, but there's always this other thing that you never comment on, and I just think that it's important, and I want feedback on that area, and it's not in the tool. They see things that you won't see. So what first step, reevaluate. Second step, determine exactly what that tool should be doing. We talked about that earlier. What are the ends and limitations? What is it this specific tool is doing? Our professional development program is assessing this. Our end of year is assessing this. Our lesson plan evals are assessing this. Write it down. Have a clear idea. And your whole administrative team, maybe there's one person in your whole school who's doing evals, God bless you. Or maybe there's a team of five or six different people, and you guys need to be on the same page about what is it we're going in to see. Step number three, don't reinvent the wheel. Just adapt it for your landscape. And if I knew more about tires and treads, I would elaborate on that metaphor. But I've been living in the South since I was about 4 years old. I don't even know what tires and chains, I don't even know. I asked my husband, I was like, what does that mean when people put chains on their tires? I should probably Google it and just see a picture. Because the idea in my head, you would laugh, was like chains, like, all right, I don't even know what that means. But adapt, don't reinvent the wheel, adapt it for your landscape and based on the resources you have. Step number four, consider drafting these tools. Don't just create a new tool and then use it. Create a new tool, go to some teachers and say, hey, we're trying a new assessment tool. I'm going to come by your classroom. Don't freak out. I know you're not super, maybe you didn't know or give them a heads up, but I'm not going to ask you for all this extra work. This is for me. This is helping me do my job. But do you mind? Of course, pick the ones who can handle that. Some teachers, they'd be all in a tizzy, but pick the ones who are a little more sturdy and say, can I come and just test out my tool in your classroom? And then revise that. And again, if you have other administrators evaluating, do that as a team. You say, okay, well, this is where I found some weaknesses in this tool. Or, you know, when I assess this teacher, I think that maybe our numbers or whatever you use, I think maybe they're a little skewed. I don't like them, you know, how they are. And then the last step there is train your teachers explicitly on what you will be using with them. If you develop a new tool or an additional tool, train them. Don't just show up and say, by the way, I sat in your class yesterday. Today we're going to talk about that. And by the way, we have a new tool. I changed all the things that I was evaluating you on, and you didn't know that. Very quickly, here are some do's and don'ts. Okay, please consider formative evaluations as a really significant resource that you have for developing and cultivating exceptional faculty. I really think it's one of your best tools. Ask for what you want. Put it on paper. Train them. Give them the resources they need to meet those goals. Tell your faculty and your staff repeatedly three different things, okay, as it regards evals. Hey, you know what? Your evaluation, when I come in there, that helps me know specifically how you're doing a great job. I know you are, but this helps me know specifically what we love about you. You've been here for 8 years. We love your work. But when I come and evaluate you, I'm not looking for problems. I'm looking for what are those reasons that we love you for. Tell them that. If you have criticism, and you should, right? Tell them repeatedly, I know you can do this. This is not insurmountable. You've got this. I'm here to help you. And then the next thing to tell them frequently, especially the informal evals, I'm not always there to watch you. Sometimes I'm just popping in because some teachers will be so nervous. Oh my gosh, she came into my classroom. Maybe a parent called. What's the problem? They'll come find me afterwards. What's the problem? And let them know that sometimes you're just there to watch the kids. All right. I know I'm out of time. I'm looking for any of those points that are absolutely important to get to. I'm just going to wrap up with Samwise Gamgee and Jaber Crow. How about that? For those of you who are wondering where in the world they would come into this. I see two models here that I think are helpful for us as we consider what it means to evaluate other people. And Jaber Crow, I won't give you a whole recap, but he's a barber, and he has someone come in to inspect his barber shop after a lifetime of serving this community. And the man walks in. There are very few words between them. And the man says, I'm here to make an inspection, he said. He propped the clipboard on his belt buckle and began to look at various things and make check marks on a ruled page. Maybe you are used to this sort of thing and don't mind. Maybe you have inspected inspectors and found them worthy of the highest approval, but I have to admit that I minded. Maybe you can understand why I minded, if you recollect that my shop was only partly my place of business. Partly it was my living room. It was Port William's living room, or one of them. Port William is the town he lives in. And I love that so much because this man comes in, he's out of context, he comes into the barber shop to do his job, right? And he starts inspecting. There are a few words that pass between them. And Jaber Crow says, he didn't understand that this is also my living space. This is the living room of my community. It's very personal, is I think what the point is there. And so remember that when you go into a teacher's classroom, it's like their living room in a way. That their space, their work with the students, that discipleship, is very, very personal. Do not be Jaber Crow's man with the clipboard. I think about that a lot. I actually carry a clipboard, and it's a good reminder, do not be the woman with the clipboard. And I just want to contrast that with what Samwise Gamgee, he doesn't evaluate, but I've never seen a more beautiful picture of a servant leader, right? And so I just wanted to put a few thoughts before you. This is in the chapter from The Return of the King. They're at the end, the chapter, The Land of Shadow. And Frodo says, I am tired and weary. I haven't a hope left. I can't go on. And this is what Samwise says, I'd carry you on my back if I could. Wow, what a beautiful model, right? And he actually does later. He says a few lines down, you can have my cloak, Mr. Frodo. And then a few lines further, Frodo took the cloak and fastened the brooch. That's better, he said. I feel much lighter. I can go on now. And so that's not an evaluation context, but I think if administrators would approach their work as cultivators and as servants, the way Samwise Gamgee said, I can't do this work for you, Frodo. You can do the work, but I can serve you. I can get you every resource that you possibly need. That if we will consider the way we run our schools and our teachers and that with that model in front of us, then evaluations can really be a joy for you and for your teachers, even when there's criticism involved, and there ought to be. So thank you so much for your time. I'm sorry I didn't leave time for questions, but I'm happy to stick around. Yes, I'm so glad you asked. Thank you. The website for all of those documents, and they're there digitally, is, let's see, I'm going to read the whole thing because I kind of don't know how websites work. https://, I think that's standard, but I'm not entirely sure. /// is.gd is good. is.gd/eval docs. Yes, absolutely. is.gd/eval docs. EVALDOCS.